and on our live line, is one of the great, church leaders, in this country as senior pastor of Trinity United Church of Christ in Chicago, where he served nearly 40 years. Dr. Jeremiah Wright created more than 70 ministries to address the needs of the African American community, one of the largest African American communities in the country. We're talking about Chicagoland. And just did a whole lot of great things. He will be here in Indianapolis next Tuesday at Christian Theological Seminary over at 1000 West 42nd Street. And you know it's going to be off the hook if he's in town along with others. And we're privileged to have, on our live line, the Reverend Dr. Jeremiah Wright. My brother, welcome.
Thank you, Brother Brown.
Well, it's glad to have you here. Let me ask, because I know when you come here to talk to here in Indianapolis next Tuesday, you're going to talk about the 10 rules of survival, get home safely, but I'm not going to ask you to talk about that. On this program, because we have a lot of people of faith who listen, a lot of people in the community who feel frustrated. They feel that the black church today is not like the black church back when you were growing up or I was growing up or back 50 years ago during the civil rights movement. They think the black church today is sitting on the sidelines, watching the community on one level be prosperous, watching the black community be probably in the greatest economic crisis since the Great Depression. How would you, as one of the great church leaders in this country, how would you evaluate the church?
I think that the church today is doing just what the church did 50 years ago, what the church did during the civil rights movement, and what the church did when I was growing up. The difference is the media coverage of the church. Mm. When I was growing up, there was no media coverage of all the black churches that were working faithfully for the education of black people, supporting HBCUs, creating jobs, creating hope for business persons, but they weren't media events, mm-hmm. so the press did not cover them. Dr. King, for instance, gets a lot of media coverage and a lot of media attention, but those in the church know that the vast majority of the black church did not support Dr. King. Mm-hmm. So the church back then, sitting on the sidelines watching, saying we don't get involved in politics, talking about heaven. And that was a part of the black church 50 years ago, just like prosperity has made the black church the media event of today. So that what's covered? You know, the average black church, pardon me, the average church, period, in the United States of America has 200 members. Mm. So you're talking about millions of churches that have 200 members. Those pastors working faithfully, those women of the gospel and men of the gospel serving the needs of their congregation, not only on a personal spiritual level, but in terms of education, in terms of liberation, in terms of fighting for justice, in terms of fighting for worker wages. All of that just continues to go on today, but the media doesn't cover that. The media covers Creflo Dollar, T.D. Jakes, Major, Joel Osteen, mm-hmm. so Al Sharpton, big names,
right.
But for faithful persons who have been doing, just like I was talking to a young, Amos, I was talking to a young pastor last week, and I said, you know, you keep defining success by the number of people in your pews. You keep defining success by the number of services you have on a Sunday, and how many your church in one location, two locations, three locations, does the pastor have a jet or a helicopter to get from one service to another? What are you saying about the churches that don't have those numbers? What are you saying about the churches that are not in major metropolitan areas with no public transportation, where you got 250, 300 people every Sunday, and the pastor is working there to get those kids in college, working there to get those kids jobs, working there to fight the racist kind of structures in which those churches sit in rural areas and suburban areas? They don't make the news. But why? It's like you're defining, I was telling him, you're defining whether or not you're successful by the world's standards and by what the media has set up as a standard of excellence. Are you telling me, I asked him, that my dad was not successful, my father? In fact, I never heard church growth How do you grow a church? I never heard that language in his vocabulary the whole time I was growing up. That's not a part of my vocabulary. When I went to Trinity, I didn't go to Trinity to grow a church, to grow a mega church. I went to church, Trinity Church, to be a faithful pastor. And the Word of God says, be faithful unto death, not be successful unto death. But you, I was telling him, right. I said, you keep asking me questions about how do you do this to build your church membership up. What are you doing as a pastor to build your members up? What are you doing faithfully? Because that's what you're going to be judged on, not how many folks you can attract. So when people start talking about the church today, that's one part of the answer, Amos. There's another part of the answer in terms of, well, the church. Let's talk about the church today, now about the criticism of the church. The church today is, for me, a 73-year-old person who's been in the church all his life, is the same. When I was a student in the city in the Virginia Union, church-related school, people keep forgetting that the civil rights movement led by the SCLC, they forget what the S in that word means. What does it mean?
Southern.
Churches up north didn't give a darn about that. And they told us to our faces, me as a student, we're boycotting Tall Hyman Miller Rules in Richmond, Virginia. We're boycotting Woolworth. Woolworth would not let you sit down. So what's going on in Greensboro, North Carolina, going on in Charlotte, North Carolina, going on in Richmond, Virginia, Norfolk, Virginia, Petersburg, Virginia, all over the South. We come home for the summer and we try picketing Woolworths in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and folk, church folk walking across our picket line telling us that's a problem in the South. That's not our problem.
Mm.
So the church, I mean, it's the same. There are members of congregations today who are just like members of the congregation 50 years ago, so that to get this disabuse the public, your public, your listening public, of the notion that the church was once a glorious champion in the fight for civil rights. The whole Progressive National Baptist Convention came about as a result of the National Baptist Convention not wanting to support Martin Luther King, not supporting civil rights, not supporting civil disobedience. But go along to get along. These things take time. That's how the Progressive National Baptist came into existence. Gardner Taylor, William Augustus Jones, Walter Fontrell, all Wyatt T. Walker, Martin Luther King. They put King out of the National Baptist because he engaged in civil disobedience. You don't disobey the laws of the land. That was the ethos. Well, so you look at that church. If our millennials had been alive back then looking at that church, they would have poo-pooed that church and badmouthed that church just like they're poo-pooing the church that they know because of the media today. And I say that, for this reason. The church that they know because of the media, where do those poo-pooing the church go to church?
Hello.
They don't. They weren't raised in the church. And you talk about the church when you and I were growing up, I'm older than you, when I was growing up, we went to church. Those kids, I was at the Sammy Dewitt Proctor conference 2 years ago, and they asked me to facilitate a workshop on hip hop and the church. And in doing this workshop, I was asking the young hip hop preachers, whom I respect highly. By the way, commercial sidebar, you do know that Common grew up in Trinity United Church of Christ Chicago. Hello. You do know that Common said in Esquire that the reason he's the man he is today was because of his pastor, Jeremiah Lake. That's Common. Anyway, I was talking about how important hip-hop is and how important the current church pastors need to be aware of conscious hip-hop. And I know
we're talking with Reverend Dr. Jeremiah Wright on Afternoons with Amos. You mentioned your member, Common. I didn't know he had another name until I saw last night when he won the award and they flashed the legal names of the two.
When his mama joined the church, his name was Lonnie Lynn.
Yeah, that was the name I saw. I said, who the heck is Lonnie Lynn?
Wait a minute. Do you remember the Denver Rockets basketball player, Lonnie Lynn?
Yes.
That's his daddy.
Okay.
That was his daddy, and he used to end a lot of his songs with tributes to his father. One of his father died about a year and a half ago. But he still is. He does not come into Chicago without arranging his flight time so that he can be at church services and at worship services. He's an excellent young man. And the persona that you see portrayed, both in Glory and the stuff he's done in movies and in his records, is true to character. There's no pretense. He's just a fine young man.
It sounds like he's going to bring his Oscar to church one Sunday.
He probably will, because when I was pastor, man, every time he was there, in fact, you can go online and Google this on YouTube. Yeah. Every time he was in church, either I would see him or somebody would pass me a note, and he writes about this in his autobiography.
Mm-hmm.
And they say commons in service, commons in worship. So what I would do is look for him and make eye contact with him, and I would raise my eyebrows, and he says that in his bio. He said, "Rev, give me the high sign." What I was raising my eyebrows with him for was to ask him, "Can you do this?"
Mm.
And he nodded his head. What I was asking him if he could do was freestyle my sermon.
Mm.
And every time when I finished with the message, I would open the doors of the church.
Right.
And after that was finished, I'd say, "Brother Commons in church today, y'all." They start clapping. He come up, that guy, in fact, I used to tell pastors, I said, "Commons is the kind of young man, gifted young man, excellently gifted, that you would learn to hate within 1 year." Why? Because you spend 3 to 4 to 5 hours preparing a sermon. That young man sit there, look at you, listen to you, and get up and do your whole sermon in rhyme. And there's several tapes of him doing that at Trinity that are on YouTube. He is what you see, a fine young man. And his autobiography is uniquely written. His mother writes a segue to every episode he talks about in his autobiography, giving the mother's perspective of it. You know, then that you see his, and then he writes about his perception of an event or a person. Like he used to go with not only Serena Williams, but Erykah Badu, and his mother writes what she thought about Erykah and their relationship. It's humorous, it's eye-opening, and it's inspirational. But the point was, I was talking about guys like Common, KRS-One,
right.
Mos Def, who's now Yassine, and the message is salt and pepper. Positive messages, important messages that the young people have as they look at the world through lenses of young persons who were not, most of them, raised in the church like we were.
Right.
And one of the young pastors responded to me, said, "Well, man, what we do, we sample, we use Aretha Franklin's Amazing Grace, we use Mahalia Jackson, we use James Cleveland." And I said, "Yeah, that's nice if y'all know who James Cleveland is."
Mm.
"If you know who Andre Crouch is, Andre just died. I was at a church and I said, let's go out with, I don't know why Jesus loved me. The musician looked at me like I lost him." He never heard of that song. But he, like a lot of other people, I said, "Their mamas aren't walking around the house saying, like your mom and my mama walking around the house saying, great is thy faithfulness, or the Lord will make a way somehow. They're walking around the house singing Nicki Minaj, Missy Elliott." So that they weren't raised in anybody's church. So when the image that they have, many of them have, of the church, it's irrelevant. It's a thing of the past. It's old folk. It's because they have no church roots. They're not anywhere in anybody's church. So when you start trying to talk with them about what the church is doing, many of them have only the television and what the media says about Al Sharpton or Jesse Jackson or Ben Chavis.
Or those pastors of Detroit, pastors of L.A., is that also hurting the church?
Right.
Those reality shows, is that hurting our church?
I think it's hurting the church for those who don't go to church.
Okay.
For those who have no relationship with the pastor, for those who don't know what pastors do outside of what that media is showing them. It's almost like if you were not raised in a home with a woman of character and integrity, then your only image of women is Housewives of Atlanta, basketball wives. That's shaping your understanding of what it means to be a wife, a mother, a woman, an African American female in 2015. Yeah, it hurts. If that's the only image you're getting, yeah.
We're talking. We're talking with the Reverend Dr. Jeremiah Wright. African Americans who step out on point and speak out and lead, or if you were to take it another way, if you look at it scripturally, because your first name and my first name are the first names of prophets in the Old Testament who spoke out. And it has always been that African Americans, whether we were colored or Negro or black or now African American, who stepped out and spoke out, were then attacked. Attacked by the media, attacked by other African Americans, attacked by the establishment. Are attacks on African Americans who speak out today, is it worse in your opinion?
Yes, it is. I think it's worse, again, because I guess the first response would be the media that is not African American, that knows nothing about the African American experience, that knows nothing about the African American church. When they write about it, look at it, or when you hear them on television, they don't even call them sermons, because they don't know what a black sermon is like. They call them a speech. Listen to that speech. And listen how the people are reacting to that speech. Well, they're critiquing from the outside a reality and experience that they know nothing about. And because of the freedom of speech, they can get away with calling names and saying ugly things. With their egregious attacks on the black church and on the black experience and on black prophetic clergy, get away with murder. Literally. They murder reputations. They cause damages in homes and families by the ugly things they say, and people, well, nebulous, let me be factual. My granddaughter got in a fight at FAMU based upon people having opinions about me who knew nothing about me. The only opinion they had was from the church. Mm-hmm. I mean, from the media about the church and the black church.
Mm-hmm.
White persons who don't belong to black churches critiquing, observing, and passing on their judgment about black worship experiences and about black clergy who would speak out for justice and for rights. Now, the attack gets much worse again because, take Ferguson right now for an example. Tracy Blackman, UCC pastor, on the ground, been on the ground, been in the streets since August with the young people. The young people in Ferguson love her, but what does the media cover? An attack in terms of the black church. Al comes to town, Jesse comes to town. That's all the media focuses on. They don't focus on Starsky. They don't focus on Tracy. They don't focus on what the black clergy are doing. So the attacks are vicious. And the young people, also, again, because of preachers of L.A. and their understanding of pimps, black preachers as being pimps, their attacks are much more vicious today than they were, say, in the days of Reverend Ike or even in the days of Martin Luther King, where people who didn't go to church, at least they didn't call King the kinds of names and use the kinds of epithets in describing him or describing other ministers.
We're talking with
back
Reverend.
Then,
I'm sorry.
That's like they do today. I would say the attacks are much more vicious. Yeah.
One other thing that comes up, we always have a discussion whenever we talk about African American youth going astray or the crime rate going up and young black men getting into trouble, sometimes young black women getting into trouble, and I got listeners that'll call up and say it's all the parents' fault. If the parents hadn't followed the Bible and raised up a child in the way that they would go, we wouldn't be having these problems. But there are a lot of instances where parents that do everything right, their kid goes off the beaten path and does something dumb. Are we sometimes in the black community too hard on parents who do the right thing, teach their child the right way, and then their child acts a fool?
Yeah, I think we're too hard on those parents because we buy into a narrative.
Mm-hmm.
When you buy into a narrative instead of analyzing each case, each instance by instance, family by family, person by person, what happens is you get these great discussions on the narrative and not on the reality
right.
of all those parents who are doing it the right way and whose kids just turned out to be kids who did it their own way, made their own choices. If we lump it all together and we follow a narrative, and again, the narrative is not our narrative.
Mm.
It's not, we're buying into someone else's narrative. Have you seen Lonnie Gunier's book, The Miner's Canary?
I've heard about it, yeah.
Well, what she describes is so on point that it cannot be ignored. Miners, for your listeners who don't know what a miner's canary is, miners, when they go below the Earth's surface, 20, 50, 100 feet, 150 feet below the surface, take a canary into the mine with them, tie a rope around the canary, a string around the canary's leg, and tie the other end of the string to a piece of wood or a stone in the mine so that the canary is trapped there. And as they work beneath the Earth's surface, they look over periodically, every minute, 2 minutes, at the canary to see how the canary is doing. Why? Because if there are any toxic fumes, if there's any poisonous gas that comes out of those rocks while they're digging and hammering below the surface that they can't detect as a human being, it will kill that canary first because the canary's lungs are much smaller. And when they see that canary keel over, they get the heck out of that mine. All right? Lonnie Gunier maintains that in America, African Americans are the canary. And when African canaries start keeling over drugs or unemployment or crime or violence, we'll have Moynihan write a report on the canary, what's wrong with the canary family. Right. If we had more male canaries in the house, then this wouldn't be happening. If the female canaries had raised those canaries instead of being matriarchal like they are, then there wouldn't be these problems with domestic violence. Or we'll have a Black Bourgeoisie Canary book. Or we have another study. Or we have my brother's keeper to help canaries understand you need a mentoring canary. There's nothing wrong with the canary. Fix the toxic environment.
Mm.
But we buy into the narratives about the canary. Yeah, that's the problem. We need more men in the canary house. More male canaries. We buying into somebody else's narrative, somebody else, an outsider, identifying, criticizing, critiquing our existence, and we buy right on into that, operating from the deficit model. There's something wrong with us. We need to fix us. That's what we need to get our people straight. That y'all keep talking about racism. No. There are some families where you have irresponsible parents, just like you have some families, white, some families Hispanic, some families Asian, whose parents are not responsible. Yes, it's not a black thing. Some parents are good parents. Some parents are bad parents.
Right.
Other parents, white, black, Asian, Italian, European, Swiss, German, African-American, do their best to raise their kids, right? And their kids make choices that hurt the families. But you don't lump that together. See, if all these parents would just raise their children, to me, Amos, that's like, let's put prayer back in the school.
Oh, Lord.
Well, when you put prayer back in the school, I grew up when prayer was in the school. That's when Emmett Till was murdered. Prayer in the school didn't stop the Ku Klux Klan. Prayer in the school didn't stop the convict lease system. Prayer in the school didn't stop white racism, Jim Crow segregation. They're praying every morning.
He is the Reverend Dr. Jeremiah Wright. He will be right at home next Tuesday evening over at Christian Theological Seminary, 7 o'clock in the Shelton Auditorium. Now, it's free and open to the public, but they would like you to register so they know how many are coming because they don't have 5 loaves and 2 fishes. So they need to know how many is coming. Just go to cts.edu. That's cts.edu, cts.edu, or make it real simple. I'm going to give you the phone number. 924-1331, 924-1331, 924-1331. He's going to be off the hook. He's going to be like Jeremiah. He's going to be like his namesake from Scripture. He's going to be like Jeremiah, except he ain't in the wilderness. He's at CTS in Indianapolis, right next to Butler University. It is an honor, sir, to talk to the pastor of an Oscar winner common.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. See, now you put that on your resume. I was pastor to an Oscar winner. Because, you know, first of all, ain't been that many of us win an Oscar.
No.
And see, the fact that you were part of that development, that's a good thing. It is an honor and privilege. The Reverend Dr. Jeremiah Wright. Thank you very, very much. It's an honor to have you on the program, sir.
Thank you so much, man. God bless you, man.